Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. Open loops. You must listen to the open loops, a theme park for absurd beliefs and systems of integration between the mind and the creative spirit. Open loops.
Every night, your conscious mind goes to sleep, and during that time, your unconscious stays up and tunes in to a late night talk show. It's time for Open Loops with Greg Bornstein. Conversations that bend. Hey, Looper. It's me, your curator of experience, your cultural hypnotist, your consciousness disruptor. Yes, I am Chief Looper here. Greg Bornstein, the host of Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, conversations that bend. Why open loops? What does that mean? Well, we'll get to that in a second. You see, this is a show about all the topics that take us away from it all. Hypnosis, magic, spirituality, the unexplained, the paranormal, the spiritual, and of course, the greatest mystery of all, who and what we really are. You see, because an open loop is just that. It's an intellectual provocation, an unconscious provocation. Yes, it is a cliffhanger. It is the proverbial dot, dot, dot. It's the thing that opens in your mind and doesn't get resolved. So you just keep wanting to learn more. This show thrives in open loops. I bring on guest after guest after guest that opens up loops in my mind for sure. And the goal is this, it's very simple. I want to challenge your existing belief systems with radically unique ideas designed to stimulate your unconscious mind as you're listening, so that by the end of the episode, you're forced to step into a higher version of yourself. Today's guest, Vivian Noir. She is an advocate for all things strange, all things dark. We're talking true crime, but also all things ghoulish, ghosty. Perhaps you might say undead, haunted, psychic, mediums. She's a paranormal expert. She's been called the queen of the paranormal talk show. She hosts the show The Dead Hours, which you can watch on YouTube, and is now available on the new streaming service, Paraflix. Vivian is, well, what I really like about her is that she's into this old school aesthetic that very much It glorifies the super femme. I mean, Vivian Noir, you hear it. It's she likes those old you're gonna hear why she likes all that stuff and even her favorite true crime case. It's all gonna make sense if you're a fan of the great I guess you could call them Hollywood bombshells, but also then you get a little bit of that Elvira thing going on too. Vivian's bringing that spirit to the world, that, you know, how should you say it? Perhaps the term is goth girl with redeemable qualities because everybody is attracted to her. Yes, she loves it. She loves thriving in that space. And it's pretty fun to diagnose it and figure out what's going on there. Vivian Noir is a great guest. You're going to hear some interesting ghost stories here. You're going to hear about an encounter with a doppelganger, a real-life encounter with a doppelganger that has supernatural origins. And my favorite, and this is why Vivian Noir might be the bad girl of the paranormal community, she's going to dismantle some of the things that she would call pet peeves. Yes, pet peeves of the paranormal world. We're gonna shatter it. We're gonna shatter it all for you. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to follow it on Apple Podcasts. And if you can rate the show and leave a review, it would greatly help getting Open Loops out there and allow me to keep bringing more fabulous guests like Vivian on. Vivian Noir, get ready. She'll intrigue ya. Today on Open Loops, we have Vivian Noir, the queen of the paranormal talk show. So excited to have her. She hosts The Dead Hours, and she is going to be the featured premiere new queen of the talk show on Paraflix, which is Netflix for the paranormal, just launched. Vivian, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be here.
Awesome. I'm very excited to chat with you just because you delve into so many worlds. You're not quite just a witch. You're not quite just a ghost hunter. You're not quite just a true crime buff. You kind of do it all, and you bring the entertainment together. I mean, I see an argument for why you might be the queen of the paranormal talk show, but why are you?
It's a lot of crowns. It's a lot of crowns to wear.
Yeah. How'd you get that moniker?
They decided to dub me that on the, they enjoyed the program. Natalie and Nick and Patty, they enjoyed the program, and they're like, yeah, you're the queen of the paranormal talk show. Like, we love like how you do your interviews, and like, we love the people you have on. And like, I was like, all right, I accept this title. I fully accept this title.
Yeah. And that's going to be, is your show, The Dead Hours, going to be one of the main shows on Paraflix? Is that the idea?
It's one of the, there are different categories of shows on there. So mine is one of the talk show. There are about three or four or five other talk shows on there. But I'm hoping mine is the one that gets featured the most and gets the most views.
Yeah. So. What is the key? Look, I'm trying to figure out how to have a successful paranormal talk show here. I mean, what do you think it is that makes a great paranormal interview?
Honestly, it's really getting into the nitty gritty and asking like the questions that, you know, because I have noticed, and I'm friends with a lot of people in the paranormal community, there are a lot of really common questions that everybody asks or wants to know of paranormal teams. So I think just getting into the details of like how they got started and like what they do when they're on site, how they may or may not protect themselves, like, because everybody has a different answer. And it's really fascinating seeing across the board how different teams respond and how they do different things and techniques. It's very fascinating.
Yeah. I have to ask the origin story for you. I mean, I always wonder, especially with people that either go into the paranormal or what came first, the witchiness or the paranormal experiences?
The paranormal experiences came first. When I was an infant, I was told that my room was across the hall from my parents' room. And she's like, I could see into your bedroom just, you know, for safety reasons. And she's like, and I looked up one morning and she's like, I could see across into your room. And there was a lady standing in your room, all dressed in white, just looking down into your crib.
Like, oh my gosh.
There was nobody else in the house. She's like, I don't know. My mom says it was an angel, but I don't know. I did some things with the Ouija board when I was younger. I never had any bad experiences with it. I'm like, maybe one of the few people that's like not afraid of it. It's definitely a hot button issue in the paranormal for sure. But I was always fascinated with the real ghost story books and like scary stories and stuff like that. And then like the witchy stuff kind of came along a little later, but it was just, I was always drawn into like unsolved things and the unknown and stuff like that. I was constantly reading those books as a kid.
Yeah, totally resonate with this. I mean, that's the whole point. The unexplained is so fascinating. It seems to be endlessly fascinating.
It's true. I'm that person that gets frustrated at unsolved mysteries because it's unsolved, because I want an answer.
Yes.
I watch it and I know it's not going to be solved and I just torment myself.
Yes, I know. It's conscious torture, which I love. It's conscious self-intellectual torture, which I'm all about it, especially inspiring cognitive dissonance. I mean, that's one of my missions of this show. Anything to make me go, well, how can that be possible?
Yeah, like the hold on, wait a second.
Yeah. I mean, is there, well, look, I imagine, okay, so I'm going to get in kind of the details here in terms of, because I've seen you put up videos. I saw you put up a video where you were totally ripping on people in the paranormal community. Yes. And I'm going, yeah, Vivian's got opinions about what people are doing weird, what they're doing wrong. I mean, look, right now, what are your pet peeves of the paranormal world?
Oh, there are a lot. There are so many. And of course, again, respect to teams is everybody does things differently. I'm not saying, and no one is ever saying that you have to all investigate the same way or that you have to approach things the same way, but there are trends that tend to drive me a little bonkers in the paranormal community. And a lot of that is the demons thing. Oh my God, demons. Everything is not demons. Like
what do you mean by that?
Well, I believe it's something that's been very kind of underscored by more popular cable programs, that a lot of times when they'll go into a location, it's always some sort of demonic force that they're going up against. And 99% of the time it isn't. And that's what's crazy, is it's like they make it seem so much more common than it really occurs. Most of the time when you encounter something at a location, spirit wise, it's usually just a disembodied person who has passed. Even if it's a negative influence, it's usually just a disgruntled spirit of a person. Rarely is it something like demonic. Not saying that it doesn't happen, but the way it's conflated in the media makes it seem like that's when you walk into a place that has dark energy, it's definitely demons. It's not. Spoiler alert, it isn't.
Right. Have you encountered a demonic force?
No. Luckily, I have not yet. Not saying that it couldn't happen. It possibly could. But I have encountered belligerent, angry spirits at locations. I've had things thrown at me. I've been grabbed, but nothing ever demonic.
Wait a minute. What is that like? Is that the actual feeling of what a human hand feels like? Go into that a little bit.
Yes. So at a very popular location in Las Vegas, actually, a very certain museum that may or may not have haunted objects in it.
The Mom Museum, Houdini Museum, spill the beans right now. What are you not allowed to?
It's the haunted museum.
There's a haunted museum.
Yeah, Zach Bagans, host of Ghost Adventures, has a haunted museum in Las Vegas. It is in a very old home, and it has a whole collection of things he has procured and come into possession of over the years. And it's a lot of it, some of it has some dark energy to it. There is definitely some dark energy in that place due to some of the things that have been collected there. A lot of serial killer things, murderabilia, as it is known.
Right.
There is a room dedicated to a particular serial killer. I was on one of the tours and we were going into that room, and most of his victims were female, as a lot of them are. And I was standing outside of the room. I waited for everyone to pass by me. Now I am standing by myself in the hall. I'm the last one getting ready to go into the room. The tour guide has already gone in. The rest of the tour group has already gone in. I am by myself. I feel a full-on human hand on my shoulder push me into the room, just like a shove. And I look, and there's no one behind me. There is no one in the hall. There is nobody around.
Wow.
But it definitely felt like the physical weight, like of a person standing behind me and giving a push, a pretty insistent push.
How different would it have felt if it was a demon?
It probably would have felt a lot more sinister. I didn't feel it was necessarily sinister or malevolent in that moment. It was a little jarring.
Are there clumsy spirits? What if the spirit just, sorry.
Like, oops, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, I mean.
Fell over. Yeah, it didn't feel like it was trying to harm me. Maybe that it was just trying to get my attention. And usually a lot of times when you're physically contacted, or if that physical contact does happen from an entity, a lot of times they're just trying to get your attention. They just want to be noticed. They just want you to acknowledge their presence. So it didn't feel anything malicious or malevolent, which I feel like it would have if it had been a dark or demonic entity.
Yeah. I really want to get back to you crapping on the paranormal community because I find that entertaining. But I am curious in terms of, I've had people on that talk about when these spirits show up, mm-hmm. there's often something familial going on, something unreconciled in life that needs to be resolved. When they're showing up for you, I mean, you mentioned the white woman over your bed as a child. Have you had any family connections to entities you've contacted, or is it truly you going onto other people's turf and encountering these spirits? What's it been like, Vivian?
I've only had one possible familial encounter, and it was when my father had passed away. It was a few months after he had passed, about 15 years ago. It was a very fleeting kind of moment where it was almost like him coming to say goodbye. But that's the only like really family connection I've ever had with a spirit. Most of them have just been just random, like going into older particularly older locations, like definitely out here in the West where it's like mining towns and things like that, you know, boomtown kind of stuff, which, you know, the towns of course were violent, and not every life ended in a particularly pretty way or a non-violent way. So I believe it's those spirits that did meet violent ends that leave impressions behind that try to reach out and contact the ones that are still here.
Yeah. This is all very interesting. I also, the thing I that sticks out to me about what you were saying with demonic forces is you're proving an exorcist point that I had on my show, because this guy was saying, yeah, people don't understand that when I'm going in as someone who is trained in this, who has actually studied the doctrine, knows the procedures, is Catholic from head to toe, knows every single thing in scripture. When you counter a demonic entity, it is way different than a spirit.
Yes.
It is a totally different thing. It is a much more violent. It can be darker. It is really wild. I wonder about, there seems to be this blending of the worlds together. Is there activism in the community to be? Are you the person that's going to make this statement known to the public, Vivian? Are you going to come down and do like spirit activism versus demons so that
I feel that like can... I should, because it gets really frustrating, because it's just I think it's because it's become very sensational, and unfortunately it's a concept that because of mass media and larger shows, because it gets ratings and because it gets conflated also with films, with horror films, whatever the horror films are out at the time, it tends to just take on its own narrative and gets legs and runs away. So I just want people to understand that it's like, hey, when you go to these places, it's not always demons. Sorry. I hate to disappoint, but it isn't. But yeah, that's just one of the pet peeves.
Right. Okay. Well, give me another one. What else do you despise in the community?
Oh my gosh. Another one is I would say definitely the thing about the Ouija boards is definitely a hot button issue. There are people that just refuse to deal with them.
Yeah.
Which being a witch and being somebody who's done magic before and things like that, a practicing, magic practitioner, as long as you're respectful of anything that is used as a magical tool, there's really no danger from it. It's just knowing how to use it. It's just, unfortunately, I think yet again, because of portrayal in mass media with movies like The Exorcist and things like that, where it's just this portal of evil. And I was like, yeah, I don't think Milton Bradley would sell a portal of evil to 8-year-olds, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, that's interesting, because I often think these days that there's an overlap between the paranormal and the conspiracy community. And I would think maybe they would.
Maybe. That's it. Yay, Illuminati.
Yeah, I mean, Satanists could be putting that out there. But that is interesting you said that, too, because I've also heard that people can accidentally open up portals by using Ouija boards, and they're not even aware of it.
If you don't know what you're doing and you're not treating the board with respect, and if you're not treating the process with respect, yes, of course, it would be literally like opening the door to your home and then being surprised when a robber came in and took all your stuff, and just leaving the door of your home open. You just have to be very aware that if you're going to open that gateway to the spirit world, you either have to be very aware and very conscious of what you allow in, and then just close the portal when you're done. Never forget to say goodbye when you're done with the board. That's just a rule.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah, say goodbye and it closes.
Where did the Ouija board come from?
I believe it came from, it's far back. It's a use was used in like spiritualism, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that, but back in the 19th century, I know they started using spirit boards, and it likely roots back to, primitive cultures using kind of the same sort of thing to attempt to converse with the spirits. It definitely made a revival with, the 19th century spiritualism with all that, with the mediums and the psychics around that time. You saw a lot of that. But then it just, I guess, got people just thought it was entertainment. It got tied in with this idea of let's all huddle around the table and talk to ghosts tonight as a form of entertainment. And then it got branded as oddly enough, as a board game.
That's what's so strange,
which is very weird. I'm like, yeah, not chutes and ladders. No, we're just going to talk to dead people. That's fine. Okay.
When did you get your first Ouija board? Did you have one around the house as a kid?
I did have one around the house as a kid. Never had anything weird happen with it. I got it when I was 10.
Did you ask for it, or was that just something that
It was just something that showed up and they just bought it for me. I'll be really weirded out if my mom goes, yeah, we never bought that for you. I don't know where it came from.
That would be cool too.
It just appeared.
Yeah. And I'm also wondering, were your parents into this stuff at all? Did you become the ghouly one?
I am the ghouly one. I am the only ghouly one in the family. My mom does not understand the ghouliness at all. My parents were both Catholic, so The Exorcist literally scared the bejesus out of them.
Right.
And I'm just fascinated with the idea of possession and spirits and things like that. And they believe in it, but not to an extent of they have, they don't want to delve into it too far. I think they're a little bit more hesitant of it than I am.
Wow. What? That is, yeah, I know. I feel my parents, they, I know my mom is a fan of this show, but but it's definitely, I know my sisters both don't understand this interest in things. It's certainly, I mean, look, I wonder about, well, I'm wondering, I mean, Vivian, you've certainly been doing this for a while now, though I don't feel like you're, you know, 300 years old either. But there definitely is a bit more of a popularization, specifically around crime, murder, true crime. But also, I mean, a lot more people doing tarot, a lot more people in Brooklyn calling themselves witches. Tell me this, were you doing it before it became trendy?
Yes, I started practicing witchcraft probably back in, oh, I would say like, I initially started when I was in high school, in like the late 90s.
Yeah.
And kind of strayed away from it and then didn't really come back to it until about like mid 2000s is when I kind of like came back around to that. So, you know, I've been practicing for probably about 16 years now. So yeah, way before it became a thing for people to do for like, I mean, I don't mind the attention. It's kind of nice having a little bit of a spotlight on the community, because it was kind of, you know, definitely looked at in an occult way before, prior, and it still is to an extent in some places, but it is nice it's a double-edged sword. When something becomes mainstream, sometimes it becomes mainstream for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed blessing.
Well, I guarantee there are some perceptions, or at least things that, which, okay, tell me this, clear this up right now for me. Catland in Brooklyn, very popular witchy store. They did a hexing ritual for Brett Kavanaugh after the whole trial, before he became a Supreme Court after he became Supreme Court justice.
Right.
And I'm just going, is that in the spirit of Wicca to have group hexings of political figures that are doing, might be doing evil things, but right. I mean, that kind of thing. I feel like it's a dark energy to put out there, but what do you think?
It is, but there are also varying different shades of practice. So there are Wiccans who believe in, like a karmic kind of rule of three, that what you put out, you get back threefold. That's one of the tenets of Wicca, one of Gardarian Wicca, started back in the 50s with, Gardner was like the first, kind of founder of modern Wicca, is what was called modern Wicca. But there are practitioners who don't subscribe to the rule of three or the like the karmic rule, and they're ones that do practice hexes and things like that. Now, do I think that energy is a loop and that you possibly can get that thrown back at you? Absolutely. Do I personally believe in the rule of three? No. I don't. I'm not a practitioner who believes in that sort of thing. So I'm kind of more of a chaotic witch, I guess is what they're called, or an eclectic witch, as I get what they're called these days, where you take from different practices and sometimes you do light and sometimes you do dark, and you kind of have to walk the middle path, because that's the path that's the most enlightened, is the path of the gray. You know, you can't be all light and all dark. You know, there has to be a middle, and that's where you find the most balance.
What is the darkness? I need to know, Vivian. What have you done? Have you hurt hexes. Some people? Yes. You've hexed people? Oh yes. My gosh. What? How do I not get hexed by you? I'm freaking out right now.
I have, and I have a funny story about like where I was teaching somebody. I had a person who was interested in witchcraft that I worked with at a prior job. And she was having some issues with an ex of hers who was problematic, and he was contesting some legal matters with her and basically just making her life really difficult with her and her son. And they had a court date that they were supposed to go renegotiate like child support or something like that. And she's like, I don't really want to face him. She's like, he's just giving me problems. She's like, what do I do? And I said, this is what you do. And I gave her the instructions and I said, this is what you do. And you need to follow this to the letter. Are you going to do that? And she said, yeah. And I was like, okay, well, I will do work on my end. I said, just to make sure, we'll take care of it. She comes the next day, like, or the day that they were supposed to have this court date. And she looks at me and she goes, the judge didn't show up because the judge went into like early labor. So the judge they were supposed to have was pregnant, went into labor prematurely. Baby was fine. Everyone was fine.
Yeah.
But she's like, then we got a different judge who looked at the demands that her ex wanted and said he was being ridiculous and said no to all the things he was asking for and gave, she's like, and he gave me everything I wanted.
Whoa. So that's pretty, I mean, that's a positive hex, though. How badly could it have gone?
There are hexes that can harm people. There are ones that are designed to harm or to destroy. There
is that on my Paraflix premium. Are we not gonna
yeah, it's premium service?
Okay.
It's on the OnlyFans.
Hexes, which OnlyFans is fascinating. OnlyFans.
There are those that exist. I do know of them. I do am familiar with some of the rituals of them just because I've always been fascinated with the occult. Are they something that to be used lightly? Absolutely not. Do I have a problem with people using them? No, so long as they're being used in right. Like if it's a matter of self-defense, if it's a matter of it's, you know, you feel you're in danger and you feel legitimately like your life is threatened, then I'm going to say go ahead. But at the same time, again, you may get that thrown back at you. So don't be kind of surprised if it doesn't boomerang.
Wow. This is a great warning for people out there. I wonder also about the doctrines of all this, because I mean, look, when I'm looking at things from multiple perspectives, which I do often on the show, I'm always looking for the similarities and the differences. You could say that some of this is magic in the Aleister Crowley sense. Mm-hmm. You could say that there are specific doctrines for witches, specifically Wicca. And then you could say, well, you know, this is hypnosis or chi or different things like that. Is there a specific set of texts where all the hexes and the, I guess, the practices of contemporary witchcraft stem from?
Some of them are from different multicultural practices that kind of span through different regions, different backgrounds, different races and religions. So a lot of them stem from some tribal things, some primeval practices or from like that sort of thing. But a lot of it's not really written down because some of it is considered closed practice.
Mm-hmm.
By certain, you know, like certain practitioners of voodoo, like certain things are only for people of that religion. It's just, that's just how it is. So some of this stuff is not written down. The things that are written down, I feel like when they do get written down, they're kind of fair game for people once they are recorded and published and put out for general consumption, that kind of slips away. But a lot of, some of these things are just kind of handed down almost like through oral tradition. Yeah. A lot of it's just handed down that way.
Wait, have you met somebody that passed you some profound knowledge that's never been written down?
No, I haven't yet, but I would love to.
If you are listening to this podcast, Vivian,
if you
are
listening, I am all ears.
This is the queen of paranormal talk shows. You better bow down to the queen. Give her information here. Yeah, I want to. Hey, look, tell me. Don't tell anybody else. If this person gives you the knowledge, I want the insight.
Okay, you'll get the inside track.
Yes, I want it. I want it. This is all. I mean, that's man. I've never. Yeah, you just kind of blew my head open a little bit, because I'm always going, well, there's so many books about the occult. There's so many things that I want to get to and read. And now you've put this idea in my head. Yeah, but what about the stuff they're not putting in the books? That's exactly. Even more profound. What? Even with ghosts, I wonder about that. Your show, The Dead Hours, covers mm-hmm. so many different famous ghost stories and different paranormal sightings and things all over the world. Is there a case that really doesn't have a lot of documentation, but people know in the community, and you wish there was more about?
I'm trying to think if there's really, I mean, there are some things that you'll try when with certain locations that you'll try to go a little bit further down the rabbit hole, and there just isn't. They're just things like either were lost to history. Like, unfortunately, some of the identities of some of the spirits when you are on these locations, because some of them, they're just their names aren't known. Their names are lost to the annals of time. And there's unfortunately no way to confirm it, because you may get an answer through a spirit box or through an app or something like that. And there's unfortunately no way to confirm if that's true or not. Cause I love doing that. I love my fact checking, you know, yeah. And see if things line up. But, I mean, outside of like, yeah, there's some that you have to get in. When you get into these places, you have to try to separate, cause some of it has become very like tied in with urban legend, or you have to kind of separate the myth from the fact. Can you substantiate these things? You know, have there been actual deaths at this location? Are they documented? You know, can you go back and like read about them? So, yeah. You know, cause there's a difference between when you go to a hotel and it's like, oh, 10 people died here, but then you can only find like, okay, well, I can only find records of like one person dying here and they weren't murdered. They just died.
Yeah. What is your favorite of the real life ghost stories?
Of the real life ghost stories, my favorite is probably there's the Black Dahlia spirit, which supposedly still roams around the Millennium Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles. The reason that is my favorite is because the Black Dahlia case is one of my favorite unsolved crimes.
Interesting.
So supposedly her spirit still wanders around the 10th and 11th floor of the hotel. That was one of the last places she was seen alive before her body was found. And people have claimed they've seen her in passing in the elevator. Especially she kind of tends to hang out near the elevators or tends to try to contact people there. I had a friend who was an investigator as well, and he was just hanging out there and with some friends. And he said, I wasn't really particularly looking for anything. He's like, but I'd heard the story. He's like, so I was going back up to the room to meet with my friends, and I was in the elevator, and he goes, and I just felt the temperature change. You know, that's usually a dead giveaway of a spirit being around.
Yeah.
He goes, so I just thought, what the heck? You know, I'm just going to, and he's like, I just started talking. He said, I'm really sorry. He's like, if this is who I think it is, he said, I'm really sorry about what happened to you. I would really want to give you a hug if I could. And he said, I got off the elevator. We went back to the room. He's like, we hung out for a little bit. We go back down to the lobby. He goes, and my female friend that was with me started acting really strange, like almost hysterical. Like he's like, people started looking. She was like, she was crying and like shaking. He goes, and then she just comes up to me and gives me the biggest hug and is just shaking and crying. And then the woman had like, she came, he's like, and then she calmed down and kind of came around and had no idea what had happened. So I don't know. He goes, but I think I hugged the Black Dahlia.
Wow. Yes. That's such a classic story. Yeah. The Black Dahlia, so legendary. Yeah. I get this feeling, Vivian, that, I mean, even your name, which may or may not be real, who knows? Vivian Waugh is, there's something very showbiz about what you're doing. Do you love classic Hollywood and these stories of femme fatales? And there's something about your personality that really kind of lends itself to this.
Oh my gosh, I do. That's like my, like one of my favorite, like the 30s and like the,
yeah,
you know, those like the why don't you come up and see me sometime kind of like,
yes,
very,
yes.
Mae West, very like, yeah, like very, very starlet, very Philip Marlowe, and like I love that, you know, Maltese Falcon kind of vibes, you know, that
totally
whole era. So that's why I was like, that took place in that era. First of all, love true crime. Second of all, takes place in one of my favorite eras. What, unsolved too? I'm there. That's all three. Stop drilling for oil. You struck it.
Yes. Yes. That Black Dahlia. I'm so not surprised that that is the Vivian Noir top thing. What do you think the overlap is between true crime and the paranormal, if there is any overlap?
I think it's because, again, people love, we're detectives at heart, I think. I think everyone's kind of a detective at heart and loves to solve something. We love to see the way a mystery plays out. So I think that's where true crime and the paranormal kind of overlap, because it's a puzzle that you want to solve. It's something that you want to see the end of, like, oh, how does this turn out? Well, what did you find? You know, what evidence was there? What was her name? Was there a suspect? Like, it has very similar themes. And plus in that it's a very like, it used to be kind of like more of a niche topic, where it was kind of like, ooh, this is like a guilty pleasure kind of thing, where not so much anymore, but I do think there's that allure to it too, where it's the stuff that's not talked about.
It's taboo.
The stuff that's, yeah, exactly. It's a little bit, it has a little bit of a taboo feeling to it that makes it extra fascinating.
Yeah. Who do you think would win in the wars? If there was a war between true crime podcasters and paranormal podcasters, who'd win?
Oh, I got to go with true crime podcasters on that one. They know all the ways to get rid of a body and to do it cleanly.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. Good answer. Yeah, you're right. There is something about it that, look, you have Paraflix, which is, I feel that Netflix is true crime already. You want to see a true crime? Yeah, you want to see a true crime? Netflix, go to Netflix. Yes. Netflix. And then you have Paraflix. That said, though, I mean, what do you think is, okay, well, we did the paranormal. Tell me about what's your favorite true crime unsolved mystery?
I would say probably top two. Definitely Black Dahlia top is number one. And then I would have to say for number two, probably it's like actually one of the ones I recently covered in the Murder Corner, which is the true crime portion of my show. Jack the Ripper.
Jack the Ripper. So much has come out in recent years.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody claims, well, this person was this guy, right. This person was this person. What do you think is the best theory at this point?
There's more than 500 suspects in the case actually actively to this day, and I covered about 10 of them in the second episode, which was a lot.
There must be a podcast dedicated to every single Jack the Ripper suspect.
I feel like there easily could be, because some of them have very scant information. Some of them have like, you know, barely a paragraph, and some of them it's like you could go on and on and on. I think that Joseph Barnett, who was the roommate slash boyfriend slash he called himself her husband, they weren't married, of the final victim, Mary Kelly, is a likely suspect, just because he did. He met pretty much all the criteria for the FBI profile that was done in the 80s. Even down to the detail of that he would have a physical like defect or impairment, and he had echolalia, which is the need to repeat back a question when it's asked to you. So he had like a speech impediment, and everything kind of fits. The build fits. The theory was that he was trying to keep her off the streets because he loved her and he didn't want her to turn back to prostitution, which she did because he lost his job. And that he went around killing these other prostitutes to scare her off the streets, which did work for a period of time, but then didn't, obviously. And in his rage, he killed her. And then after that, that's why the killing stopped, because the woman he was trying to protect was dead. And then there was no need to kill anymore. So
yeah,
there's a lot more positive than negative for him. And he's probably my favorite suspect. There are so many that are just so fascinating of like, how did we get from here to here?
Yeah, there must be some suspect theorists out there too.
Oh, totally. There's one of the ones that's like that I get asked all the time, especially if you bring up Jack the Ripper, is like, oh, well, do you think H.H. Holmes was Jack the Ripper? No.
Wait, who is that?
He's America's first serial killer.
Oh, oh my.
He's going to be covered in a future episode, I'm sure. I'll get there.
Yeah.
But there's a theory that it was like, oh, that's the one of the popular theories is that the Jack the Ripper, whoever Jack the Ripper was, migrated to America and then continued to just murder under a different name. But the problem is the timelines don't line up, the motives don't line up, nor do the methods of killing line up, which generally serial killers do not change their method of killing, just like a tiger doesn't change their stripes.
Interesting. What in the world is this? Why do people such as Jack the Ripper and the Zodiac Killer, some people really get away with doing this long term and you can never figure out what's going on, and then some get caught. What do you think it is? Do you notice any differences between the ones that we still don't know today versus this person, of course, serial killer Ted Bundy, boom, we know.
Right.
This
right, some of them I think it was for example, like now just for the Ripper, it was the time period, there was no actual like real like forensic, like he got away with it just purely out of the time period he did it in. Zodiac almost got caught multiple times. It was just police error that let him slip the net. And the other ones, it's just because every serial killer pretty much is a narcissist, is a sociopathic narcissist, and narcissists hate not getting credit for things.
Right.
So eventually they will either intentionally mess up or mess up just because they think they're smarter than everybody else and they get sloppy, and that's how they get caught.
Wow. Okay. This is good advice out there for people that want to break into this. Fascinating. So, okay. Here's another thing I have to ask you about. The ghoul babe. What does that mean to you, being a ghoul babe? I feel like you own this identity quite a bit.
A little bit. I mean, it was something that we used. I used to do a podcast with two other hosts back. We started it last back in 2019. We started a couple of really good friends of mine that I used to work with. We decided, we're like, hey, we like to talk about this stuff. Why not just talk about it on a podcast? It basically just be us having a conversation. So that was kind of our thing, was that since it was three girls, there's like Last Podcast on the Left, which has three guys on it. We're like, okay, well, we're kind of basically doing that, but how do we differentiate ourselves? Yeah. Okay, well, it's three women, so we're going to call ourselves the Ghoul Babes, but you know, like kind of like ghoul friends and like the cute, you know, spooky girls that, you know, you don't want to tell your mom about.
That's okay. Yes. This is what I want to go into. Let's go into some cultural anthropology here. I do think, and I know that even Elvira is the classic example of this.
She's the original ghoul babe.
She's the original. There is something about this taboo of this very attractive cemetery girl that could rip your head off or can summon spirits. I mean, what is going on with that identity?
It's funny, is because I was the weird goth kid in high school. And that was just weird back then. It wasn't attractive. So I was like, it's interesting to see that kind of like turned around and gone like, oh, that's sexy now. Oh, okay. Apparently I've been sexy for a long time and I had no idea. I was just weird before.
Right. Do you hang around? I mean, do you have close friends that know about this ghoul babe life that you have going on?
Oh yeah. They follow me on Instagram. So they're aware of the whole, like, they're like, yeah. They're like, we've seen you be really stupid too. So we know that you're not always that, you know, pinup gothic queen. We've seen you choke on a frosty. So yeah, you're an idiot sometimes.
Like, yes, that is so. I also wonder, let's talk a little bit about your paranormal investigating life.
Sure.
What are some of the instruments that you usually use when you go to these sites?
So a lot of times when I'm going to the places, I am investigating usually in conjunction with another team. I work very closely with two very popular teams. One of them is on Paraflix. The other one is very popular on YouTube and they have over 100,000 subscribers. So I work as a location scout for both of these shows, for both the Haunted Side paranormal investigations and for the New Reality paranormal. So when I'm going, I usually am going with them and they have very cool equipment. So I don't have as much on my own, but I would say probably my favorite, I mean, cameras, you have to have good cameras. First and foremost, cameras. And then secondly, I would say a good EVP, like a recorder to catch voice recordings, to catch EVPs, and a spirit box. I always go with the spirit box, the SB7 or SB11. I mean, you can't beat that. I tend to shy away from the apps.
I was going to say, it feels, yeah. How can that be legitimate? How can a phone app really get you in touch with this world? I've always wondered this.
I'm very skeptical of the apps just because they are, they're programmed third party and I don't know what went into the back end. And this is just me, you know, that's just my personal preference. I don't, if people like to use the apps, if, you know, nothing against you, but it's just for me. I don't know what went into making them. I don't know what goes into the back end of programming as far as that goes. So I don't know if it's just a word bank that's just spitting things out. I've heard it say sometimes they'll say some things where it's like, okay, well, that's probably wasn't a word bank, but is it using the microphone that's on your phone to listen to things around you? I don't know that. So there's too many unknown factors for me with the apps to count them as being able to put too much weight into them.
Yeah. In terms of what you've seen from these sightings and then later looked at on camera, what has been the most compelling evidence that you've ever encountered?
I've had things thrown at me.
Did they capture that on camera?
Yes, we did capture that on camera. That was at the Mizpah Hotel in Tonopah, Nevada. We were in the basement. And I had the second camera, the static cam was set up in the doorway of the bank vault where two people were murdered. And I'm walking across to go to the corner to turn around to get a better shot. And something flies past my head and hits the wall in front of me. And I turned around to the investigator I was with, Patrick McQuarrie of the Haunted Side. And I went, was that you? And you can see him on camera because he's near the static cam and he turns to look to react to the sound. So it's not him. And I looked and I was like, there's nothing, like, it's not the ceiling crumbling down. It literally like a rock just flew past my head. And then I couldn't find where it went. We've had doors slam. I had a door pulled out of my hand.
Oh.
At a location.
And for people that are of this skeptical bent, in order for that to be fake, in order for that to be a placebo effect, what laws of physics would that have to be defying? Because that seems hard to, it seems hard to placebo your way through that.
Exactly. There are certain things that, especially when it comes to, like, I always tell people that the best instrument you have on a ghost hunt, honestly, like, you could bring all the equipment you want with you, but the best instrument you have is your body. The way a room feels, the energy that's inside of a room. You can usually tell when you're on site at a location if something just feels off and it feels weird because your body picks up, like, you know, electric, you know, fields and things like that. You'll just feel weird and you'll feel like off kilter. So listening to your body is important, but I will say that those are the hardest things to prove on camera. If you're there and you feel a temperature shift, well, I can't show that on camera unless you have like a thermal on me. Or if I feel like I'm being touched, obviously you can't see that. So those are the things that it's like, I like that stuff because it's just in the moment and it's great to be on site and have those things. But as far as capturing things on camera, when you have somebody standing that's within camera range and they clearly did not pick anything up and throw it at you, and it's not an edited shot, it's a solid shot.
Yeah.
You know,
That's, yeah, that is, it seems that that would be hard to fake. Also, I wonder, because there are so many, and again, I'm sure you have thoughts on this, so many mainstream ghost shows now, Discovery Channel, TLC. I mean, they're all over the place. And oftentimes what they show, yeah, it's stuff moving around, vague images. They claim the, so you see that, but you never really quite see something there.
Right.
Have you ever seen, well, first off, how do you know when it's a bunch of TV people just making something up versus an actual experience? Are there clear things that you can identify?
There generally are clear things you can identify. Like, you can tell if it's, you know, if, especially if you're listening and they're like, oh, that was a breath. And you're like, no, that was a car outside. Like, yeah. If you have like noise canceling headphones, you can usually, you can sometimes debunk some of the sounds that are captured. Because debunking, I always say one of my biggest, that's again, kind of ties back to the pet peeve. Not everything is paranormal. So when you go into a location, even if it is haunted, not every sound you're going to encounter, not every sensation you're going to encounter is going to be paranormal in origin. So you always want to go into a place with a mind to debunk first. You always want to go in with the possibility of like, okay, let me eliminate what I think it could be before I try to say what it is. And if I eliminate every logical reason or logical answer that I can think of, you know, Occam's razor, you know, the most logical mm-hmm. you know, reasoning is usually the right one. But if I can eliminate every scientific or logical reason, then I'm left with what? The paranormal. But you always have to get through that first before you're just like, it was a ghost. It's a demon. Let's get out of here.
Yeah. You know?
So I think that a lot of times you can watch, and I do have friends. I have a great community of friends that are paranormal investigators and debunkers who do that for a living, who watch people's videos and try to catch, you know, people who, unfortunately, there is a segment of the community out there that will stage evidence because it gets them views. The more extreme, the better. I've seen in videos myself where somebody had a microwave fly across the room, but if you slow it down, you can see the string they use to pull it across the room.
Oh, come on.
It's a piece of fishing line and it barely catches the light from the night vision camera, but you can see it for half a second. But I have friends that have like eagle eyes that catch that stuff. You know, they're great. And they're integral to the paranormal community, the people that watch these videos and try to debunk, because you're on site. You're not, maybe there's something you missed. Maybe there's, you know, that's any worthwhile paranormal investigator should welcome somebody trying to debunk the footage, because then once you've eliminated all the things that it could be, then what are you left with?
Yes. I am totally with you. I wonder, I mean, I just think point blank when I see a video that is claiming, look at this ghost, and you see some translucent figure, that it's fake. I just assume it is, but right. I also don't know what to look for versus what not to look for, because people tell me I'm looking at deep fakes all the time anyways. Have you ever seen a video of a ghost in a traditional sense that said, you know what, I'm telling you, yes, this is real?
I've seen, yeah. The only thing I've seen, I've not seen a full body apparition myself. Nor have I seen one really caught on camera that I have caught. But I have seen a shadow hand reach out of something on camera. And that was real disturbing. And that was during a live stream.
Oh, whoa. Where can you find that on the Dead Hours?
It's actually on one of the channels, again, that I work with pretty closely. It was on the haunted side. They were doing a 12-hour investigation live stream of the Mackey Mansion in, I believe, Virginia City, Nevada. And they were near the attic hatch. And this, again, this is live. This was live streamed. So this was not pre-recorded and posted after the fact. This is live streamed to several hundred people who are watching. The camera is pointed at the attic door, like the hatch it's locked. They weren't able to get in, but as the camera pans back, you can see, and nobody's moving. There's literally two of them on site. One of them has the camera. The other one's standing on the steps near the door. Neither of them are moving. And you see this shadow hand kind of come down and then go back up. It's really eerie. There's
yeah
a full moving shadow caught. I've seen caught on stairs going upstairs. Just a shadowy, like a black blur. Again, nothing with features. I've never seen anything with like a full, like a person with features. Apart from, and I don't know if this counts as a ghost, but I had a doppelganger encounter.
Oh, what? Now, what is that, a paranormal event in your world?
I do feel like it was. It was a doppelganger of a living person, like an exact copy of this person.
That's strange. And when you say, does it open up the possibility? It makes me think of that show. What was it? The Outsider, on based on the Stephen King book.
Right.
That something came out.
Like, yeah, it was crazy. It was that we were doing an investigation weekend takeover at a hotel. And one of the investigators I was with, we had split up. We had all split up and taken several groups throughout different parts of the hotel. And neither group knew where the other one was at. So we were not in communication. You know, cell phones were on airplane mode. Nobody's talking. So I was with one group and we had investigated one area of the hotel, and then we were regrouping, changing batteries and deciding where to go next. So we had no idea where the other group led by the other investigator was at. We're leaving the hotel room after we'd switched batteries, and he comes running down the hallway, like running at a full run, and grabs my arm and goes, "You guys need to get to the rafter room. You guys need to get to the rafter room now," which is like a room up in the ceiling. It's in literally in the rafters of this hotel. And I was like, okay. And he just keeps running and disappears around the corner. And we're like, okay, that was really weird. So we go up there, and lo and behold, there's the other group. And the other investigator I was with, that was in my group, goes, "Hey, you told us to come up here." And the other one goes, "What?" He goes, "They're like, dude, we just saw you in the hallway. You told us to come up here." And he goes, I never left this crawl space up here. I've had a camera on me this whole time.
Oh my gosh. Multiple people experienced this?
Yeah. I was the first one out of the door, and the other investigator was right behind me, and he saw it too. So two of us saw this thing.
what do you think it could have been? It sounds like a shape-shifting creature.
It is possibly either like energy or residual from that location that decided to take the shape of something that would get our attention. And we knew that would get our attention. So again, it didn't feel malevolent, and it didn't feel like it was, it just felt like it was trying to get us somewhere to get our attention. So it was really bizarre. Like, but it was just, and I put the other person on the spot later. Several times I have asked him in confidence. I was like, "Okay, you can tell me. Were you messing with me? Was that you? Did you run and find like a shortcut and like, you know, clue passageway back to the crawl space in the attic?" He goes, "Absolutely not. Like, that was not me at all." So unless he's still pulling my leg, I don't know what that was.
Yeah. Huh. Do you think that there is something? I've always wondered this, Vivian. Why are ghosts always associated? True crime, I get. It's dark. There's blood. There's death. Mm-hmm. Why is the paranormal usually, even if it's not malevolent, it's mm-hmm. still always in this mise-en-scene, if you will, of mm-hmm. darkness and dreariness? And I mean, angels are, or if you're an angel, it's always light and ethereal. Why can't you have a casual ghost encounter? Why is it never room temperature ghosts?
Room temperature ghosts are,
yeah.
I love the joke of like, why is it always like 18th century Victorian ghosts? And why isn't there like, you know, some 2008 ghost screaming, you know, "It's Britney," and like the, you know, like,
yes, it is weird. Do you have an explanation for that?
I don't. I just know that, It's funny because it's like, I don't feel like the time, if a location's haunted, the time really seems to have no effect on it. I've seen things during the day at places. I feel like the contrast is better at night sometimes, especially with night vision. And because that contrast is better, you tend to capture more. Plus it's quieter. The energy is down. Nobody's really there. I feel like spirits are more apt to come out and try to be active when it's as quiet as possible, when the location's closed or when it's not active. Just because some tend to be shy, but yeah, it's like, I don't know. It's always like, yeah, you're always like, oh, it's like, there's no like, hey,
Yeah.
I just went to get a coffee. Like, I mean, there, I've heard of vague stories of that where people are like, oh, I saw my neighbor. Like, I saw him go get the mail the other day and it turns out he died 2 days ago. And like,
the doppelganger story is the closest.
Yeah, the doppelgangers are really kind of like the closest sort of thing where it's like where they've like, oh, I saw so-and-so walk past my window and it turns out they died like in their apartment 2 hours before that.
Wait, does this doppelganger thing happen a lot?
I've heard of it happening. There's been, you know, urban legends and things like that of it happening. And supposedly, I mean, I don't know. Like, all I know is it was a solid. This was not an apparition. This was not like I could see through them. This was a solid person wearing exactly what the person was wearing.
Huh. Yes. Tell me this. Psychics. I know you've said some things about psychics too. Yes. I know that's one of the pet peeves.
It is pet peeves.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on psychics these days?
I do feel like there are legitimate mediums and spiritual communicators and healers and psychics. However, I have a dear friend who's a very good medium, as he has said multiple times. Generally, if a medium reaches out to you and tries to elicit a reading, they're not real, unfortunately. It's a lot of times there's a lot of con artistry that can unfortunately be tied into the mediumship. And just because, like we talked about, the occult and kind of witchcraft and things like that becoming very big, especially with platforms like TikTok.
I was going to say, what percentage of TikTok psychics do you believe?
Probably about 2%.
Wow.
Just because there is a thing called cold reading. Magicians have debunked it. They've shown, I mean, Houdini was a madman for debunking psychics, which he thought were all fake. And he proved quite a few to be fake during his lifetime. That was his, like, he was on the warpath for that. And kind of don't blame him, because people, it's definitely puts people in a, it's not cool in that you're taking people when they're vulnerable and they're looking for answers and they're looking and they might not be in the best or most stable mental health state. You're taking advantage of people who are just desperate. And that's never resonated well with me. It's the same kind of principle as the people that would sell snake oil out of the back of wagons and promised it would cure everything.
Or the dude that hits you up when he knows your relationship's falling apart.
The hey, you up? Mm-mm.
Hey, you want to talk? It's okay. Hey, I know you're going through that.
I thought you had a shoulder to cry on. Not yours, demon. Get out of here.
Yeah. Okay. You can hex that guy. Yeah. No. Okay. So there is a rise. My gosh, I read an article yesterday that was about this reality shifter movement on TikTok of people that, let's call it what it is. They're not reality shifting. They're just pretending to be in Harry Potter. But no, they say it's not just that. We're not acting. We're not just faking. We are dropping into other parallel timelines. Come on. I do not buy it for a second. Now, that said, I have a hypnotist background. I believe it is possible to bring people into a profound trance state where you can suggest things and make them take on characteristics that they've subconsciously absorbed, such that they believe they are in another reality temporarily. But to just say all this stuff, and then so that's one trend on TikTok, and then you have hundreds of people that are now medium psychics giving intuitive readings everywhere. Do you have any guidance for people out there so they do not get conned by these people?
Well, like I said, first of all, good pointer. First of all, out of the gate, if they approach you for a reading, it's probably not legitimate. So that's first and foremost. Mediums wait to be sought out. They're not the ones doing the seeking. They're going to wait for you to come to them because you need something healed or you need questions answered. They're not seeking you out. Also, if they're telling you that there's a darkness around you or dark spirits around you or trying to scare you, also red flag, generally probably fake. They're just trying to intimidate you, fire and brimstone, same sort of thing. They're just trying to scare you into like giving them money to hear what they have to say. If they ask for money, first and foremost, like right out of the gate, probably not real. Also, it doesn't hurt to do research on, like, especially tarot card readers. There's a lot of that on TikTok. Yes. Look into what the cards mean, because a lot of them aren't even reading the cards correctly, like at all. Don't let anyone tell you that the Tower is a good card, because it isn't.
You've studied the tarot?
Yes, I do I've done readings for people. I do readings in very limited amounts. I also never charge for readings, just because I feel like it's wrong to charge for a gift that you are given.
That is what I have asked people before. I do not get it. Why is every psychic charging?
Right.
But yeah.
Like, oh, you're paying someone and they're telling you what you want to hear. Well, okay.
Yeah. Now, and you have Lorraine Warren, who was a medium, but you know, people had to call her.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know how much he charged to go to houses with Ed and clear things, but I know she wasn't doing a lot of advertising for that.
Yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. They know that their servicers are sought out when they're needed, not because they're out here trying to hustle and make a buck. That's always a dead giveaway of like, if there's, you know, if you're getting messages on Instagram or on TikTok from somebody like, oh, like I'll do a reading for you, or I'll do a reading for you, here's my Cash App, here's my Venmo. Red flag. Nope. Block it. That's not real. They're generally just trying to get some money out of you. And they're going to, you know, again, they're going to probably tell you what you want to hear in very vague, cold reading form.
Is there anyone you do like these days that's out there publicly that you think, okay, yeah, I think this person has the gift?
Definitely my friend, Sean Warren, who's one of the members of New Reality. He has his own healing and mediumship channel that he does, and he does do readings. He does charge for readings, but again, he's like one, I don't have a problem people charging for legitimate services, and he is legitimate because people seek him out. He doesn't go and drop into people's like inboxes and is like, hey, there's a darkness following you, give me $5 and I'll get rid of it. No, like, you know,
yeah,
especially when energy work's involved, I do kind of understand. I don't charge for things like that. That's just my personal philosophy. I know people who do that are legitimate, and I don't have the problem with them doing that, you know, obviously, but he's amazing. If you're looking to have questions answered, I would definitely approach him. Patty Negri, who's one of the, CEO people of Paraflix. She's worked with Ghost Adventures. She's legitimate. She's got great energy about her. I would definitely trust her. And I have some very friends who don't really do kind of they do their own thing. I have my friend Ron, who does card readings. He does readings by Ron. He's a pretty good intuitive reader, but yeah. I keep my circle like really, really small, unfortunately, just because I am that person who's, I love all of the side of the occult. I love that, but I'm also very skeptical at heart because I'm very guarded of being, you know, it's like, well, I don't want to get swindled either, you know? And I'm always that kind of like that. Yes, I believe in this, but
what is the most outrageous?
You gotta prove it to me first.
I gotta know, what's the most outrageous psychic claim you've encountered?
Oh gosh. The worst ones are the loved ones, right? The ones that are like, you're going to be married in 3 months. I had one tell me one time in a reading, because of course I like to go in and I don't give, and you shouldn't ever, don't give away information. If you can, like, make all of your social media private so that they can't go in and like search pictures and try to find pictures of your family and know what they look like and know their names. Keep all that stuff on lockdown, because there's certain things that you'll want to hold back to tell if they're legitimate or not, right? It's kind of like a little bit of a test. So I had one tell me that was like, oh, you'll have a baby this year. I had surgery years ago. I can't have kids.
Oh my gosh. So, I always feel weird because and this is why they're so powerful. I remember in high school, I was so skeptical. I was watching Penn and Teller's BS and reading all the James Randi books, debunking psychics left and right. And then all of a sudden there was a psychic at this after prom party. And this woman sat down and she said, yes, there's going to be romance in your life and all this stuff. And I'm sitting there and I'm ready to fire at her with cold reading. And this is how you're doing this. This is how you're doing this. Da, da, da. And I couldn't do it because I'm sitting there going, oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because you're in the moment. You don't want to hurt this person's feelings. It's tough. I almost feel that there should be a coach for setting boundaries with psychics. Yeah. If you want to call them out. I think it's a weird situation, but so are you, when you've had these readings, I mean, what happened? Did you just take it, Vivian, or did you fire back?
I was like, that's weird because I can't actually.
Oh, and what'd the psychic say?
They were like, oh, well, and you can see the backpedaling start immediately. Yes. It's like the, oh, well, oh, maybe it's somebody around you. I was like, well, that's vague.
Wow. So you called them out.
Yeah, I did. I'm like, because there are certain things you can, like I said, there's questions that you can have in your pocket that only you would know the answer to kind of like test the waters if you're not sure, you know, like it's like some ask a question about a friend that like, oh, say, oh, well, they moved here and maybe they didn't move there. Or say like, oh, are they okay after the thing in this place? Like there was a flood there. Are they okay? And you already know that they're okay because you've already heard from them, but you know, maybe like they don't know that. So it's like a little tricky and it's a little subterfuge, but at the same time, it's like, you got to know if somebody's not just, you know, throwing you breadcrumbs and telling you like, oh, you're going to meet your soulmate in 6 months. Okay.
Wait, yeah, have you thrown these tests at people and it's worked? Yes. Has it ever worked? Did someone nail it and you said, okay, yeah, legit? Yeah,
there's been times when I've had people go like, no, I don't think that's them. I'm like, okay. Or like they've been able to confirm a piece of information that only I knew. So I've had that happen before with a couple friends who are tarot card readers, because I read it myself. So they've nailed basically the trick question. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Continue. Otherwise the reading would stop there and we would be done.
Yeah. This is wow, Vivian, you really are well versed in the crapping on the fakes in the industry, but also all sorts of different topics. What other stuff can we expect on Paraflix?
Oh, there's tons of paranormal content. So it's basically the Netflix of the paranormal. It's go to paraflix.com. You can sign up with a year subscription or a monthly subscription. It's $9.99 a month. Or if you use the code Natalie10, you can get 10% off of your subscription. And there's tons of documentaries there. And it's great because it's not just people are like, well, I don't really like ghost shows or like, you know, haunted things. Well, it's not just that. There are some on there that are aliens. There's shows about, you know, Illuminati and conspiracy theories. There's shows about cryptids. There's, you know, so it's basically anything that fits under that paranormal umbrella. You know, if you love all that stuff, all of that mysterious content, you're going to have a lot to watch.
Yeah. And it's Paraflix with an extra X.
Correct.
Yes. Yes. The streaming Paranormal Plus. Have you ever done that paranormal dating app?
I didn't know there was one, but I kind of want to try it now. Is it called Haunter?
It's not, but that's pretty brilliant. No. There's. I always hear it on when I listen to Coast to Coast. They George Norrie always say, oh, and if you want to meet your significant other, go to paranormal dating and you can meet conspiracy. That, I mean, I just think it's interesting that so many people are openly discussing this in a way it used to be more fringe. Tell you what. Totally. Yeah, if there is, you know what, if I'm not sure there is a goth teenager listening to this right now, but maybe, but if there is, because we've talked about TikTok and the algorithm brings it to you somehow, and someone's out there, they're into the cemetery stuff, you know, is there any advice you would give to that future ghoul, adult, prince, queen, king, babe, stud to be.
Absolutely. Be your true, authentic self. Like, and it's, I know that's easy to say and hard to practice, but that's something I always wish I'd known at that age, because at that age, it's so hard to not want to just be liked and just to try to, you know, you just want to feel like you belong. And yeah. It's okay if you don't. It's okay if you don't. It's, you know, it's love yourself first and love who you are and love all of your weird. Love all of your weird and be the strange you want to see in the world.
Be the strange you want to see in the world. That is my mission as well. I love that. You articulated it so well. Vivian Waugh, host of The Dead Hours and the queen of paranormal talk shows, coming to Paraflix. Paraflix is out now, so check it out. Vivian, thank you so much for coming on the show. What an enlightening conversation. I really
of course, thank you. This was really fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Vivian Noir, thank you so much for coming on the show, Vivian. Thank Rodney McGilvery for the theme music. After that, crazy theme music provided by Zero Boy. Thank the royalty-free artist that came up with this song. And thank you for listening to Open Loops. Hey, what's that behind you? It's nothing. It's nothing, I promise. I just thought I saw something that would... Just keep an eye out. Keep the lights on. We'll talk soon.